And welcome to the Life in Lane 4, a podcast where we dive into the struggles of balancing swimming and school. I am your host, Anton Baragovoy, and joining me today is Sebastian Smith. I saw Sebastian pop up numerous times on the Drexel Swimming Instagram page, and I knew he would be an amazing podcast guest, as he was a part of Drexel's incredible 3.87 team GPA. I'm extremely grateful to have gotten the opportunity to meet with Sebastian, and I truly hope that you enjoy this episode.
Hey, Sebastian, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. Really, really good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So college swimming just ended a little while ago. How do you think your season went?
Yeah, I think the season as a whole is definitely the best I've had this year. Coming into my junior year, you're taking from your past experiences from your freshman and sophomore year. And I think I started to really capitalize and figure out a lot of the really important pieces to like capitalize on my season. A lot of dual meets went very well, had a great midseason meet, closed out championships really solidly and had a good postseason. Taper was pretty solid. I wouldn't say we're experimenting with some new things. So I think there's room for improvement on the taper side. But as a whole, just training year and just me personally growing in college, I think, was an awesome experience this year.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. What did you take from like your last 2 years of, swimming at Drexel?
I mean, there's so much. I think for me coming from club to college was very different. You know, I never did a double in my life until I got to college. But the technicality and the way I approach swimming is like science. Just learning, you know, the way I break down races now, it's a lot different than I did before, you know, having only really doing the 100 and the 50 now, you know, it's all about technical details, you know?
Yeah.
Like how many kicks, how many strokes am I taking off every wall? You know, like the arm position, the tempo, you know, it's like, if you ask me my tempo for my 100 fly on the third lap, I could tell you, you know, it's just like, that's kind of where we're at now. And it's very cool to see that, but it's like a science experiment, you know, in practice, we try different things. It works. Sometimes it doesn't, but I think that's what's like made me enjoy the sport even more is it's not just like mindless yardage, you know, by any means. And I didn't do that at my club, but it's just a different level now, you know, being able to suit up in practice, do things like that. I think I've just grown from that. And then I think, you know, now this sounds kind of funny, but like learning how to just like cook, sleep, like dialing in nutrition and like all of that extra stuff, you know, it's like you don't think about it as much as you probably should. And I think being able to do that and learning from, you know, the past 2 years of what to eat at the dining hall, if you're on the dining plan, it's like how early I should be waking up to get to practice. Like those just little things like that, it all starts to, those little pieces just start to stack up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said in the beginning, you said you like capitalized on like your dual meets and like your champs meets. You said that the midseason, postseason, champs meets went really well. So yeah. What exactly did you capitalize in all your races?
I mean, I love racing. It doesn't matter how I feel, what it is. I'm going to get up and I'm going to race, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I just this, like I love it. You know, that's why I hope most of us are here, because it's just a fun thing to do. But I'll like every meet, I just went in like, if I can try something different, you know, whether it's like for my 50 free, instead of taking 5 kicks, I'm going to take 6 this time. You know, it's like, how do I approach my wall a little better? You know, it's like a lot of little things, and it's hard to get right like for the 50. Sometimes it is just like, hey, I'm just going to go race. I'm just going to go do what I got to do. But sometimes, you know, it's just looking towards the little things, the technical details. A lot of the postseason racing for me wasn't even necessarily about the races. You know, I knew that that was going to come together, but it's just taking care of yourself. You know, we had our conference championships where I swam like, I think 10 races over the course of 3 days. So I was in all of 4 relays, 3 individuals, and obviously trials and finals. And then basically went right back into a last chance meet in Princeton, and then again went to the NIC meet. So basically 3 weekends in a row where we're just like competing, you know. So wow. Being able to keep my everything that's I've been doing throughout the whole year just stays. And, you know, like I didn't really fall off on the back end of like that third week in a row of like swimming, you know, because it's like, hey, I've been getting 9-10 hours every night, you know, I'm eating, I'm fueling my body properly. So it was just like, this is just the norm at this point, you know, it wasn't like anything different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how you did 3 meets back to back to back.
Yeah,
weekends. I did 2 just the last 2 weekends, and I'm like all this last week my legs have just been so sore. Like I wake up, I can barely stand. Like it's so bad. Yeah. But like you said, during the taper stuff, you started to like experiment with it, like with your taper. So like, can you go into a little bit into that?
Yeah. And I don't know if it's necessarily as much like experimenting, but kind of how we do our taper here. And it depends a little bit on the group that you're in, I would say, you know. But there's points where like it could just be a set, and it might just be more mental than it is physical. But it's like you have the choice of doing more or less, you know. And I've always been on the side of doing more. And I think this year I kind of started to realize, and kind of like postseason, that I might need more rest than I have in the past. You know, as I'm getting older and things like that, things change. And especially like the training I've been doing for the past 2 to 3 years is different than the training I've been doing the past like 5 to 6 years ago, you know? And it's like the taper has to match the training that you've been doing throughout the whole year, you know? Mm-hmm. But a lot of it is just like technical stuff, you know? It's breaking the 50 into 3 parts, or the 100. It's like we're doing a 50 off the blocks to 225s or just 250s, whatever it may be. And it's just like from the mid-season meet that we had at Brown, I knew my kick count and stroke count for every event that I was going to swim at our conference meet. And then I was able to just kind of apply that whenever we're in a set, you know. It's just, hey, what, it's like, we're doing, I don't know, we're just doing like 100 pace, and it's like 100 pace with details. So it's like, I have to hit this kick count and stroke count and be as fast as possible. So it kind of turns into just not maxing out, but maxing out with what you're going to try to accomplish at like your conference meet, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you have like the mentality for that? Like to keep like, oh, I'm going to do 5 kicks off every wall during this 100, because like it was like 100 plus details and stuff like that. Like I tried that. I forget when I tried that, like I had practices and stuff. I'm like, all right, this practice, I'm going to hit, I don't know, 4 or 5 kicks off every wall. Yeah. And I do that for the first 20, 30 minutes. And then I hit 3 for the next half an hour, 2 the next one. And then like, last half an hour of the practice, I'm hitting like 1 or 0 kicks off every wall. So it's like, how do you keep the mentality like, I'm gonna do 5 kicks off every wall, like on this 100, on this set, whatever?
I mean, yeah, that's very fair. Like, I think you gotta pick and choose your battles. You know, if we're doing 1,000 on the house warm up, like choice warm up for like a big set, it's like, I'm not gonna go do kicks on that. You know, it's knowing when and where it's actually like the most beneficial, I think. You know, it's like if we're doing a sculling set, like you just have to be in that moment with what you're doing, I feel like is very important. But it's not, it could be not even starting with 4 kicks. It's like, you know what, I'm just going to make sure I don't breathe off the first wall. And then like next week, I'm going to add 1 kick, and then I'm going to do that until it's good. You know, it's like, that's kind of how I've always approached things. Like coming into my sophomore year, I was coming off a lot of shoulder issues, and my stroke was just not where it needed to be. And the first day of practice until probably the new year, like didn't take a hard stroke, like once, not like a sprint freestyle stroke. I was like, mainly doing underwaters, and I was reworking my stroke so much that I literally couldn't sprint because like I was changing so much.
Mm-hmm.
But then come the new year, we were at this random meet, and then boom, just like that, it like just all came together, and then everything just started to piece, and it just all moved so much faster. But I'd spent so much time in the beginning of the year focusing on like those little things, you know. Our coach always says swimming's only 12% of your week, and I think that's very important. You know, can be an important 12%, but when you're at practice in the pool, 100% in. As soon as I leave, you know, I back off. You know, there's a time and a place, and you have to learn to, I kind of like to play the high and low game. You know, I'm a very all in or all out type of person. And it's like, as soon as I'm in the locker room, you know, all I'm thinking about is swim. as soon as I leave the locker room, you know, that kind of just doesn't go out the window, but it's like I'm going to live my normal life or whatever it may be, you know. So I think that's also important when you're thinking about what you're doing in practice, is full energy towards it. And then when you're done, you leave it at that. Because when you're thinking about, oh, I got to do four kicks off every wall, like in class, it's just going to like screw with you a little bit too, you know, if that makes sense. So that's kind of the way I like to approach like all of that stuff.
Yeah. So like kind of like take like step by step, and then like everything out of practice, and then nothing when you're out of practice, pretty much. Like, yeah. It was like, that's how you like, that's your mentality for it, pretty much.
A little bit. Yeah. I feel like it's grown in the past couple of years, and it's changed a little bit. But I feel like that to me is the best way to go about it. You know, you're leaving all the energy towards that, and then, you know, you just save and recruit that battery until you got to come back. You know, that mental capacity, being able to turn that on and off, even in the middle of a set or a practice, is really important, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you were talking about like this postseason, like you had like postseason meets. Like, honestly, I've never even heard of a postseason for swimming. I feel like we're always in season, like long course or short course or whatever. But what's like a postseason? Like, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's a good question. So I don't know if our championship meet would be postseason, you know, and like, I agree with you, we're always in season, but I think the mindset shifts, you know, that meet we went to in Florida, the NIC meet, time's out the window. I don't care what I go. I'm just focused on getting my hand on the wall and trying to beat the guy next to me. Cause at that point, that's what it's all about. You know, I'm just trying to beat the guy next to me, trying to score the most amount of points for the team. It's like, hey, if I go a 50 and the 100 fly, but I still win, you know, that's okay. Yeah. Obviously, I'd like to go faster, but I think when you take time out of the equation, you'd actually be surprised at how fast you actually end up going. When you stop thinking about, oh, you know, my legs hurt, I feel this, I feel that. It's just, I'm going to beat the guy next to me. And that's kind of how, like, that's what I would call postseason. You know, you don't have that mindset all year round. That's why, like, it is in that postseason bracket. That's what I kind of think about. That's something the coach has been big on, is just get your hand on the wall on the postseason. It's very important.
Yeah. That was actually like the second meet that I had in that back to back that I had. The second meet was kind of like a blow off. I did like, I don't know, 2 IM, 2 fly, 100 fly, and a couple relays. I like couldn't care less about those events. Like, I'm more of a distance backstroker guy, but so it's like 100 fly, 200 fly, like I dropped like 10 seconds in the 200 fly because I was I was just racing. I was racing some of my friends that were there. So maybe I'm in the postseason as well. Maybe I'm in the postseason as well.
And I think that is so important. And I don't even know if people realize that, but it's like, go and do off events. Like, that is a good idea. Like, remember why you came to do this sport and why you love it. And it's like, there's no pressure. Like, I got to do the 1 AM at this meet, you know? It's just like, I haven't done the 1 AM since I'm like 10 years old, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, it's fun and it gets you away from your main 3 to 5 events, you know? When it's like, you're only thinking about like my two back. It's like, let me just go do a one breast and just see what happens. Cause I guarantee you'll finish the race and you'll be like, you know what? That was pretty fun. And sometimes you need that just to keep the freshness and like wanting to continue in the sport. You know, I think that's important.
Yeah. How do you think that your junior year, like this year, how do you think you compare it to your freshman and sophomore year?
That's a good question. I think the whole season, I think it was easily the best. And just speaking towards Drexel, like men's swim team, easily my favorite year. So many accomplishments, the guys that we brought together this year, feel like we took a really big step academically, athletically, and in every aspect, it was just, we were just better. And it was just a fun group of guys. And it's not like the past 2 years were bad by any means, but I think we just had a special group of guys this year, which made it really cool. But for me, I felt like I just leveled up this year in a lot of ways. You know, I'm very grateful to still be going best times at this point. You know, it definitely becomes a lot harder at the collegiate level, but I feel like I've done a good job of progressing for now 5 years, you know, consistently. Like, I don't take that for granted. You know, I think it's definitely a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it it was a really good year, you know. Like, I would have liked to have been a little faster at our conference meet, but you know, if that's the price we have to pay for the whole team doing better, you know, that's a price I'm willing to pay. You know, I still went best times, and this is the most amount of points we ever scored, and I think, you know, everyone did a very great job this year.
Yeah, what do you think triggered like this big uplift, this big step in the Drexel swim team?
Yeah, I think it's been coming for years. You know, our head coach, Nathan Lavery, and then the assistants that he's brought on. I've never seen a man work harder in his life. Like, and I genuinely mean that. He is probably overworked and underpaid, but he doesn't do it for the athletic piece. He does it for the human part of us. And I think that's what's working right now, you know, is at the end of the day, like, if it comes down to it, the swim piece doesn't matter. It's developing good human beings and people who are going to be successful 10 years, 20 years down the line, and more importantly, are going to be good people. And I think that's what he's done here. And I think we've brought in a lot of good people. Not like we didn't have good people in the past.
Yeah.
But especially like the love for the sport. Like, this is probably the most amount of kids this year we've had be in the, like, not postseason, but just like, hey, I'm going to go train this summer. I'm going to hit some long course meets. And we're going to have some fun this year. You know, it's a bigger group than it has in the past. The amount of people that are eager to get back in the pool, you know, I think is something that has changed. And when I came, before I even came here, when I was getting recruited, you know, by our head coach, like, he had talked about this vision and I was a big piece of that. And I'm glad that, or he wanted me to be a big piece of that. And I'm glad that in whatever way I've been able to help. And I think, you know, we've progressed a lot in the past 3 years since I've been here. Like, it's so cool to see from where we were to where we are now. You know, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean your coach does it for, like, the human part of it versus the athletic part?
Yeah, it's person over performance. I think that's kind of the best way to put it. You know, records are going to get broken and everything like that. And that's not to take away from the fact that he's going to do everything in his power to make us the best athletes that we can be. Yeah, but it's more than that. You know, it's keeping each other accountable and growing in this time. You know, I feel like most people will probably grow and change the most in their 4 years of college. You know, just being responsible and just being a good person. But I think it is really important. Just from the way, like, when we are good and pretty responsible about doing that, you know, just showing up to things when it matters. Like, when we have recruiting trips, like, every single person on that team is there. You know, no one's just like, oh, I don't want to go. It's like, no, we're a team. We're gonna make sure our guests have a good time. You know, it's like, we'll go mini golfing as a whole team together. It's like, it's trying to just build that outside stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think your favorite memory has been at Drexel so far in your 3 years?
That's a good question. I think it was just recently this year. So, our women team GPA has always been better than the men's for the past, I don't even know how long. So we got the GPA reveal. So the men's team, Saturday practice, we're all standing there and our coach has it written on the back of our team GPA. And he like flips the board around and it was like a 3.79.
Oh, wow. And
everyone was just like, and then he was like, yep, you guys beat the girls by like 0.02. And we started losing like our minds. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, we did it. And like, everyone, and I was like, I was kind of shocked, you know, that was kind of nuts for me.
Yeah.
But like, to have come that far, you know, and like being the second highest GPA in the nation, like, yes, everyone was just like, and then it just keeps going, you know. It's like, we went undefeated this year in our dual meet season, you know, wow, and second highest GPA in the nation. It's just like every day is a great day, you know. It's like there's not just like one memory, you know. There's just so many because it's a good group of guys to be around, you know. It's just like every practice, it's an enjoyable experience, you know. I'm not like I have to go to practice. It's I get to go to practice, you know. And I think when you had that mindset shift too, that can help your performance or whatever it may be, you know?
Yeah. What are some like the motivation tactics I use on yourself or like on your teammates? Like for anyone's like, oh, like I have to go to practice kind of like people that have that kind of mentality, like,
yeah.
How do you motivate them to be like the best version of themselves, the best version of themselves.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think like for me, I'm a very actionable person, you know. I've learned to grow and be more outspoken and stuff like that. But sometimes it just comes down to like people feed off of good energy, you know. Like I'm coming in the morning and I'm gonna be talking, you know, I'm up, you know, I'm ready to go as soon as we get going, you know, and it's just like I've had a couple of people literally tell me they're like, I've started to love the sport more because of how much you love it, you know? And it's just like being able to have that ability to rub off, like, you know, like that means more to me than any medal I could ever have, you know? It's like being able to bring people in and love the sport too. But we all have a common goal, you know, like we all want to swim fast at the end of the year, but it's also just about the journey too. You know, the progress we make over the season and stuff like that, I think is all great.
What do you like now that like your season's over? I know you had like that postseason meeting in Florida, but like now like your season is like officially over. What are you doing to keep the yardage up, to keep like the training?
Oh, I'm still full in. We're still going. I'll probably go until about August. We have this Tier Pro Series meet we're going to in Fort Lauderdale in like a month, right around my birthday. You know, I took a couple of days off. You know, I think it's important mentally, and some people need more time than others. But, you know, at this point now, this is just routine. It's just the standard, but like I enjoy it. You know, it's you're not pulling teeth to get me there. And I think that's why I don't need to take a break, you know, potentially or whatever it may be. So meet in Florida, and then I'll hopefully do some national meets at the back end of the year, go to Irvine. So besides that, you know, there's just a lot of other stuff academically. You know, I'm looking towards master's programs right now. So that's like a big piece of what I'm doing. But it's like all the classes I'm taking too right now are really cool. So, you know, it's a lot, but it's like all stuff I want to be doing. You know, it's great.
Yeah. What are these practices that you guys are doing? Like how, like to prepare for the pro series, to prepare for or any meet really? Like what does like a daily or a weekly schedule look like?
Yeah, it's a little different now. I'll definitely say that just because we're gearing for long course. You know, short course and long course are very different. And I think we're not experimenting, but we're definitely trying some new things. I think underwater wise, we're doing a little bit more resistance underwater, stuff like that. But we've been going through it lately. Not like bad, but like these sets are not that like super easy. I think it's think about like how long the time it takes to race, you know, because it's like you would think about it, it's like, oh, if we're training for 100 long course, you know, it's like do 100 yards, but it's like do a 125, you know, so it's like kind of adding stuff to that. But recently, you know, it's a lot of lactate, but it's like getting a good set of legs on you, being able to finish at the end of a race, you know, right now. So we're kind of in like a little bit of a higher volume, a little bit more aerobic stuff, but from a week's perspective right now. So the schedule kind of flipped from what we were doing in season. So we'll lift in the afternoon, and then we'll do about a 2-hour session in the morning every day, and then like an hour session in the afternoon, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays with that lift. So the 2-hour sessions in the morning depends on the day, but it might be just like more like it's pushing that like high, not anaerobic threshold, but like, you know, A2, A3 in your anaerobic capacity, and then we're touching like lactate threshold, lactate production, all that stuff. And then the afternoons, those hour sessions, you know, aren't even 1,000 yards, you know, it's a lot of high energy sprints, you know, a lot of just like being powerful, stuff of that nature. And you know, it's either we're coming from lift or we're going to lift, you know. So it's like if we're coming from lift, you know, it's like keeping that speed. It's like what we did in the weight room is basically what we're going to go do in the pool, but just swim oriented. And then if it's the other way around, you know, we're going in the lift trying to hold as much power as possible, you know, if that makes sense. Trying to keep the volume high, or not volume high, but like, can we hold the same weight from the first set to the last set? Kind of like that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Saturdays are threshold work. But that's the general kind of breakdown, a little bit of the week.
That's cool. That seems pretty predictable. I feel like I've asked this question to pretty much everybody that I've interviewed so far, and like they've all said like we lift like in the mornings, or we lift whatever, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, swim, like threshold lactate. Like it all seems very it seems kind of interesting to me. Like I've talked to my coach about this a little bit, but like I've personally enjoyed like my session as like distance, kick, IMs, sprints, like anaerobic stuff.
Yeah.
Morning like recovery on Friday, and then it's like he calls it a wild card Saturday, where it's like literally it could be anything from we did like a set of 16 400s to a set of like 850s, and it's like I always get really scared for those. I always get scared for those practices because it's always like they're usually very hard. I mean, all those practices are not easy, obviously, but like those practices, like specifically like at 8 a.m. off of like a mediocre breakfast and like. And like waking up like an hour before, it's like I was getting really scared for like the Saturdays especially. But like speaking of that, what do you think your hardest set at Drexel or in high school event?
Yeah.
What do you think your hardest set, your hardest practice has been?
So this was in the ramp up for trials last year. Cause I it's funny, like I've like recently like been talking about this because like this kind of like yards long course training that we're kind of doing is definitely more than, or it's just different than what we do for like collegiate. But the set was long course. So it was 9 150s. I think it was like odds off the block, even from a push. And it was max on like, it was on like basically a 1-to-1 work to rest ratio. So I think it was like, you'd finish in about like 130, maybe like under that. And you just have to go. And I think the sets changed a little bit, but it was 98% plus from the jump. So the first three were with no equipment. The second group of three was with paddles or optional paddles. And then the last group was with fins. One of the guys on our team was doing backstroke, and he was passing me on the like the last one.
Oh my god!
So a lot of the sets that we do it's up to how hard you want to push it, you know. Mm-hmm. So the way he kind of told us the set is you're gonna go do 1 150 as fast as possible, and then you're gonna go do 1 150 again, and then 1 150 again and again and again. So you're only just focused on the 150. How fast can you go? Mm-hmm. How hard can we push it? And then it's like, okay, then you're going to get up again, you know? So it's like, instead of thinking about it as 9 150s, it's more like you're doing 9 150s, like 1 150.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That one killed me a lot. That one. Yeah. That one hurt.
Yeah. That sounds awful. That sounds like, I'm scared just listening to it.
There's a purpose behind it though. You know,
yeah,
like,
of course.
We don't do mindless yardage, but yeah, that for me was one of the toughest sets. We've done some other tough sets, but that's the one that sticks out to me the most for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you said you're with the trials and you're wearing the United States trials hoodie. I saw that. How was that for you? I mean, like, that's probably your biggest meet ever, right?
Of course. Yeah definitely my biggest meet. I think it's probably most people's biggest meet. But it was really cool, you know. Honestly, like just the lead up to it was very cool. But even just being there, you know, don't take it for granted. I think it's a very cool experience that, you know, you might only get once or twice in your life, or for myself, and maybe never for most people, you know. I think it was a good learning moment too, you know. I don't think there was pressure, but it wasn't like an insane amount of pressure. Obviously, I wanted myself to do well, but you know, more than anything, it's like, hey, learn, you know, I'm watching these guys warm up. I'm seeing what they're doing before, like their pre-race stuff, whatever it may be. What are they eating? Things like that, you know? And then it's like, hey, I go to our conference meet, and this is like, oh, conference is nothing compared to trials, you know? What's interesting, too, is it's like a FINA-regulated pool. So not a lot of people, like, think about this, but when you go out there, it's just you, you know, it's like if you go to your normal like dual meet, you know, you could be right on the edge of the pool and next to their lane. There's like probably like 20 feet back is where like the coaches can really stand. So when you go there, it almost feels like you're kind of getting lost in the pool sometimes, because like it's sometimes hard to like identify markers. Like you don't might not even think about it. But when you're swimming, you know, you might see a lifeguard stand that tells you kind of where you are in the pool. So you don't have any of that. So it's kind of just like open swimming, you know? Still very cool. And it honestly like feels a little empty, but then you like get out and like walk around and then like you see the crowd. But it's definitely a little different than what you would think, but such an awesome experience. And I'm glad I had the opportunity to go.
You said it was a learning moment. Like what did you learn from trials?
That's a good question. I mean, like, it's just so much, you know, how just like even the training leading up to it, learning from that too, you know, but just like how to take care of your body. Like if we're flying, it's like, how do you take care of your body when you're got like a 4-hour flight or whatever it may be? It can just be little things like that, but also just taking the moment in too. But like learning wise, like I said, it's maybe it's like, what is this coach doing with this swimmer? It's like, how soon do they warm down right after the race? I would assume immediately, but you don't know. It's like, hey, if they have a pre-post meet like interview, like how soon are they warming down? What are they eating? Or it's like, how soon do they go from the warm-up pool to competing? You know, things like that. When do they put on their tech suit? Like, what are they eating before their race? If anything, it's like I've seen a lot of like supplemental stuff, you know, like sodium bicarb. Like, I don't know if you know the product Morton. But it's like this sodium bicarbonate gel. Really, really expensive, but I saw like a couple guys there have it, you know. So it's like you kind of start to see like what are people doing and just kind of like learning the high level swimmers and what they do or maybe what they don't do, you know.
Cool. And what do you think like what were your takeaways from it? Like, I know you said like you learned like the pre-race routine and like the post-race routine and stuff, but like, I mean, this is for me, this is kind of for me mostly, but like, what did you learn exactly?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess like, that's a really like, I feel like I have to like think, like write it down and like really think about it a little more.
And like, I think just off the top of your head, I guess, so you don't really.
Honestly, a big one would be how much clothes people wear before they get on behind the block. I think that's more important than people actually realize, and how close you actually should be pushing your warm up to when you race. You know, people will warm up an hour. Well, you should probably warm up an hour before, but like people will stop their warm up an hour before they race. And at that point, it's almost kind of like not pointless, but it's like that lactidosis that might come in your race, you know, you haven't hit that and your muscles aren't warm, you know? So like I wear gloves, I wear a parka, like I wear everything, you know? So keeping your extremities warm, I think is actually a bigger thing than people think about. So I think that was like a big one too. And it's interesting to see people's mentalities too, of how they approach racing, you know? Some people are big visualizers, you know, they'll go out there the day before, they'll like think about the whole race and how they're going to break it down. Some people like music, some people don't, some people like to do all of that. So like, I think you kind of have to take and pick and choose what like, oh, I kind of like that works for me. You know, I think that's the ultimate thing is you have to figure out what works for you. Cause you know, Caleb Dressel could jump really high right before his race, but maybe for you, it's like, that doesn't work. You know, you got to figure those things out, but definitely being warm and like nutrient timing, I think is an important one too.
What is the nutrient timing? Like, again, this is for me. This is for like me as a swimmer and like what I could do for at races.
I mean, yeah. So like carb timing and stuff like that can be really important. You know, like 20 to 30 minutes before my races, you know, like I'm having gummy worms, you know. I think that people don't like, oh, you're eating candy right before you race, but it's actually like there's, you have the dextrose, sucrose, and glucose, and like those are all different energy systems in which it enters your body, you know. So it's like that's actually like pretty important to be fueled, you know, right up into your meat. There's this big rule, I guess you could call it like the 4-3-2-1 or like a 4-2-1-0. So hours out, you should be having 400 grams of carbs, 2 hours out, like 200, 1 hour out, 100. And then like right before, you should be having like the gummies that I was talking about.
Yep.
So like follow that pattern, you would actually be surprised that like, not even just for that race, but if you have multiple in a day, like how much stronger you would feel like post race. And then also like, you know, make sure you get protein in after you race within that 15, 30 minute window, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll tell my parents I need gummy worms for the races, for my meets.
Gummy worms, Snickers is a pretty good one too. I always like Snickers, but yeah, like gummy worms.
Perfect. Great excuse for it. So
it's so funny you say that, because I'm getting so much better, but I used to be a really big candy guy, like huge candy guy. Like I could pound like a family size bag of Reese's peanut butter cups, Twizzler filled, and like a thing of donuts. Like we're talking like an absurd amount of sugar. But you know, I kind of know the science behind these things now. And people are like, any excuse to get gummy worms in. And I'm just like, no, it's not like that. There's a purpose behind it. But
You were talking about like the different like pre-race routines, like Caleb Russell, you said like jumps really high, or like visualizes, or someone listens to music. Like I know that's kind of what I like to do. Like before my big champs meet for the season, I honestly like I had so many nerves for like all my races. Like I threw up like 3 times during that meet. Like it was a little scary. It was a little scary for me, but I threw up a couple times. Like I kept getting these like butterflies that I like people keep talking about. So like, what is your pre-race routine to get rid of those butterflies, to like get you mentally locked into whatever race you're swimming?
Yeah, I think over the course of my time, I think it's definitely changed and evolved. But just towards your butterflies, like don't take it as a bad thing. Like, it's a good thing. You care, you know, you want to do well, like embrace it. You know, I think that's a piece of it too. It's like, I think part of me now being in the position I'm in is I know what I'm capable of, and all I have to do is go do it. And all I think about is what I've done the past couple of months. You know, it's like, I know, like after you finish a race, if you can touch the wall and you don't even have to look at the time, and you can just be like, I did everything I could have done to deserve the time I'm about to get. And then you look up at the board, it's good or bad. Like, I feel like if you can sit there with yourself and be like, you know, I did everything to deserve the time I'm going to deserve, you know, sometimes, hey, you make a mistake here or there, but for the most part, I feel like you can look at that board and say, I got those good hours of sleep. I did the nutrition stuff right. And I think you'd look up at that board and be surprised. You know, I used to be a big music guy. Now, not as much. You know, I kind of like to take in everything, you know, practice a couple starts beforehand, just twitchiness kind of a thing too. I like to be warm. I like to kind of like stay away from people. I like to sit down. But I think part of a good pre-race routine is not getting too caught up in it too. I think sometimes people are like, I have to do this. If I don't take my shirt off or put my goggles on the right way, I'm going to have a bad race. And I think if you can learn to like destigmatize that, and it's like, this is the only chance I have to swim well, I feel like that's not a good way to approach it necessarily, you know? And it's more so just like, if it's a lottery ticket, I have the most amount of tickets here, you know? And it's like my chances are, you know, I think they're higher than the other people around me. You know, I think that's just, you got to bet on yourself. You know, I think that's part of it too.
Yeah. I'll take that into consideration. Not into consideration. I'll take that into action at my next race, at my next meet. Going into more of your like recruiting process. I know this is like a little bit earlier, but like what was your recruiting process like?
Yeah, I would definitely say mine was a little bit unconventional, or not unconventional, but just different. You know, I honestly didn't get that many looks, like in high school. So I was kind of in that COVID time period too. So I was training, like there was a period of time, like I just so much changed. Like I think I put on like 50 pounds and just like grew and everything like that over like that COVID summer. And then basically like I just been working, you know, we were just grinding and I didn't even realize it and just kind of just kept going through it. And it was just like a good thing to do during COVID, like going through it in a good way. But then we did like a couple, we did like a long course meet that went well. And then at this time I'm reaching out to like, I'd reached out to basically like, I feel like every Power Four school, like in the nation, you know, filled out the questionnaire, sent the coach an email, got about zero responses. I think, oh, so damn. I reached out to Drexel and Howard as well. And they both, Howard's at HBCU in Washington. And then Drexel reached out, but they didn't actually, they didn't respond for a while. And then I had re-reached out to some schools. So they were in the middle of a coaching change. So I think that, but what's funny with how I actually came to Drexel is I reached out on like my Gmail account to them again. And then they had reached out to me on my iCloud account within the same day. But we didn't know each other. We were emailing each other because it was on two separate accounts. And I was wait, I was like, how did you get this email? Like, and then we kind of like, that's how it started. So it was funny. Like we reached out to each other at the same time.
That's funny.
And then kind of at that time. So like I had progressed so much in a short amount of time. And that's, I went to this meet like summer championships in Greensboro. And then like schools like LSU, Auburn, like Louisville, those type of schools started to reach out. But at that point I was like, you know what? There was a couple other things, just from the way that they kind of like conducted themselves. I was like, Drex was the place I want to be, you know, they invested in me when, you know, I didn't have that, those times to back where I was. But I think a big decision for me was the impact that I can have, and not just like swimming, but just as like a leader. And, you know, like the coach was coming in just around the same time I was in our visions. Totally aligned. So I think that was a big piece of it. And like being in Philadelphia is something that I don't take for granted. I think it's awesome to be here. You know, I love it. I think it's, I don't think I would have done well in a big college town, just not for me. So having the freedom to kind of like mess around with things. But that's kind of how that went. And honestly, like, I didn't even know it at the time, but this is probably the one of the best decisions I ever made in my life. Probably the best decision I ever made in my life. You know, like I bought in early. I was the first commit in my class. And every time like my coach would get a recruit, he's like, or get a commit, he's like, don't worry. He's like, we're going to get you some good guys. And I was like, okay. Like I believed in him and he believed in me. And I think that's why it just so worked so quickly, you know.
Why do you think Drexel was like the best decision you've ever made?
There are so many reasons. People probably won't believe me, but this place is special. Like, I genuinely believe that Drexel University is a special place. The people are amazing, you know, especially in my profession and what I want to get into. You know, the things that I've been able to do for Drexel Athletics in the Drexel Exercise Science Program, you know, I definitely wouldn't have been able to do the things that if I was at an LSU or an Auburn, you know, building these really good connections with good people. And then everyone here cares for the most part about you as a person and not just you as an athlete. And I feel like the higher you get up, and this doesn't happen all the time, but, you know, it's like sometimes all they see is a number, you know, whether that's how much you cost to stay there or how fast you are for the team, you know, and it's like, here you don't really see that, but a lot of the things that I've been able to do at Drexel University, I don't think I would have been able to do anywhere else. So it's cool to be a part of that.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. So I'm guessing you went on like a Drexel recruiting like visit, like an official visit.
Yeah, so I committed before I actually went on my official visit, but I'd gone on like two unofficial visits. During that time.
Yeah. Did you go like, so you said you went on two other official visits. Did you go like to other schools as well?
No, I meant two unofficial visits to Drexel beforehand. Like, I was passing through Philadelphia, and I had come through. But this is why I said it was, like, kind of a gamble, and I didn't even know it at the time. But, like, they were the only school – or, like, Drexel was the only official visit I'd went on, and that was already after I had committed. So, like, I had talked to a lot of other places, but honestly, none of them were – I wasn't excited about them as I was here, you know? That makes sense.
Yeah. How was that official visit? What were some of the things you did there?
Well, so it was kind of funny, actually. I ended up, there were supposed to be like three or four guys, but this was in the midst of COVID. So I was actually the only guy on the trip, but there was like five other girls and most of them actually ended up committing.
That's cool.
So that was very cool. But honestly, it was a really cool experience. You know, like I kind of already knew some of the guys a little bit, and it more so for me wasn't, do I like these people? But it's like, and like, do I want to come here? Cause I'm already committed. So it was just like really getting to know them and just being like, wow, I'm going to be part of this team in a year. You know, it's like, that's pretty cool. So it wasn't like, they're just like trying to make it what it is to try to like sell. Like we don't really do that anyways. We don't like sell the school, you know, it is what it is. If you want to come here, you should come here because you want to, not because like we're trying to like band-aid up stuff. But it was cool to just like really get to meet the guys in like a really like chill way, you know, like we did a lot of cool stuff while I was here. And we like to make our visits, you know, a good time for everyone.
What do you think anyone listening to this should know about the whole recruiting process?
That's a good question. And honestly, right now, especially with the way things are going in the NCAA, you know, what I say now could change tomorrow. But it's going to get harder to go to a Power Four school. And I think some people need to understand that, hey, like shoot for it. But mid majors and D3 programs are not a bad place to be. You know, I think people underestimate, they always just look towards the Power Four. It's like, oh, you know, I want to go to Texas. It's like, well, Texas is cutting guys that could be scoring at their conference. You know, it's like, I would want to go to like a safe place, you know, like I am right now. You know, no one on our team is even worried about getting cut. The coaches aren't around losing their jobs. None of that. We don't have football, so we don't have to worry about that kind of money stuff either, which is like a nice thing to have. But I think it's important to ask some hard questions to coaches and make them really think about stuff. And I don't even know necessarily what those questions, you know, may be, but I do think it is important for them to understand what you're getting yourself into in this new age of swimming, you know, because programs are going to get cut and that's what it is. And going to a place where you feel safe. Other than that, go to a place academically that's where you want to be, not just athletically. You know, things can happen while you're here, you know. And like if people on our team like left, they would be happy to be at the school for the academic purposes of it too. You know, it's like a lot of things can change in 4 years. So go to a place that you would go to without the athletics and then add that on top of it, I think is an important piece.
Going into more of like your major, your exercise science major, how, like, what made you choose that major?
It's a great question. I think for me, I started taking strength and conditioning and like strength training seriously like my junior year of high school, not even seriously, but just started like lifting. And I'm not talking like, oh, we're doing biceps and stuff like that. No, we're talking like, how am I going to get like more power and speed and like stuff like that, you know, like real strength and conditioning. I've never really been a school person by any means. But that has definitely changed. I am now reading textbooks, which was never something I thought that would happen in my life. But I think the thing that I found like easy is my athletic and my professional career just mesh so well. And I think a lot of people don't get that. So I kind of took advantage of it. You know, it's like I tried to equate everything that I'm doing in my exercise science classes to what I'm doing in the pool. You know, it's like we're learning about the ATP system, the oxidative and the glycolytic system. And it's like, oh, it's like I can use this for swim, you know, and it's like I can tell other people on my team about it and it's making us all better, you know. So, you know, I never was a science person, but now I just found my thing, you know, and I'm glad to have that and I'm all in on it. And I've done a lot of cool things while I'm here just with the people involved. So it's been really cool to see that.
Yeah. What career, I mean, this is kind of just like for me and for everyone else listening, like what does exercise science, like what does that like career path kind of shape up to be?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different pathways, and I think mine is actually not unconventional, but not the norm. Like exercise science could be, you know, just doing like PT or an athletic trainer or like chiropractor, mm-hmm. like things along that line. But I want to go more into human performance. And the reason I say human performance is because I think you need to not think of it as like an athlete, but like we were talking about, like a human. Like just the person itself. Because there's a lot of things that entail that, but strength and conditioning, human performance, that kind of area. You know, I just want to work with athletes in the best way I know possible. And I think that's strength and conditioning and being able to coach them and things like that. And that for me is what I'm the most passionate about. And that's where I think I can make the biggest impact.
That's cool. Yeah. How do you So this whole like central passion or like this whole like major came out of the fact that you really fell in love with like the strength and conditioning that you started doing in junior year.
Yeah.
That's kind of how you picked your major.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. And this is part of it is just like how my coach was bringing me in to be a part of something bigger. The same thing was with the program director. You know, this program is pretty new. I think it started a year before I came here. So it was definitely a smaller program, but they built this huge new building with all of these resources. So before you know Center City. So like you would go from Drexel University into Center City to do these classes. And now I just have to walk 5 minutes away and it's this huge building. I get to work in this really cool exercise science lab. All the classrooms are awesome. But for me, like when I was coming here, talking to the program director, he's like, we're building something here. You know, he's like, there's really no exercise science program on the East Coast that is in a huge major city and has a ton of sports around it. And I think that's what we're trying to build. And I think we're doing a very good job of that so far. But I think that was another piece is like, I can come and be something bigger than myself. Mm-hmm. And I think having that intimate kind of connection of being a smaller program too, you know, it's like, I know all of my professors and they're great. You know, I get a lot of hands-on work with them because I'm not in like a 50-person class, you know, it might be a 10-person class. So it makes it a little bit easier for me to enjoy and understand what I'm learning, you know?
Yeah. What do these exercise science labs look like at Drexel?
They're pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty cool. So this year, as part of my cooperative study, and for like the listeners who don't know that, at Drexel, basically you have to do a 6-month co-op or basically an internship either through Drexel University where they have a ton of connections to Philadelphia or places around the world, or you can create your own. Most people don't create their own, but I ended up creating my own. So basically my position is was the sports performance coordinator for all of Drexel Athletics. So that position kind of entailed working with all of the heads of all of the different areas of sports performance regularly, whether that was in strength and conditioning, nutrition, sports med, psychology, rehab, all of that stuff. And then I got to work with a bunch of technology too. So one of the things that I wanted to do was we have access to this lab. Why don't we get the athletes in it? So we created, we went to the International Review Board and basically have a battery testing for all of our athletes now where we can bring them into the lab. So that involves a DEXA scan, which is body composition. And then we have VO2 max, Wingate tests. We have lactate tests. We have a lot of different 3D motion caption cameras, force plates. I don't know if you're even understanding all of what I'm talking about. Right half now. Of this.
That all sounds really cool.
Yeah. But that's just what I love. So being able to bridge the gap, you know, I think kids respond really well when you show that you're genuinely invested in them. And I think that was a step we could take. You know, it's like we get our basketball players in to do a Wingate test. A Wingate test is 30 seconds of a max anaerobic capacity test. And it's like the shot clock in a basketball game is 30 seconds, you know? So it's like being able to make those ties. And then it's like, once we have that, they're wearing heart rate monitors. So we can track where they are in practice, how much of their max capacity that they're at. And then we can kind of start to get into the little bit of a more nitty gritty and really start to like maximize these kids' potentials if they really want to, you know? So I think that's kind of like along the lines of what it is, but It's all that stuff where, you know, you're wearing the mask and you're running on the treadmill. Like all of that cool stuff. So it's a lot of that, but it's really cool to like have bridged the gap and basically like create the whole system.
Yeah, that's cool. What was like the whole co-op like having to deal with all like the directors of like sports med, sports, like everything. So like, what was that like?
It was so awesome. It was so awesome. You know, it was in season for me too. So it was really great. They made it easy for me to kind of work around my athletic schedule. But I kind of got to not do what I want, but like I could kind of tailor things to what I enjoyed and stuff like that. So one of my favorite things there, shout out to Coach P, Coach Palmer. So he's the basketball head strength and conditioning coach along with their board certified dietitian. So I learned so much from him. But I actually got to work with the whole basketball team, and I have been for a couple of years, but I kind of got a lot more full reign, and I basically was coaching them from start to finish through their lifts and helping program everything. And then I would also get to sit courtside at their games, and I would get to warm them up beforehand. And then I was doing some back-end data stuff as well. And then just being able to learn my coaching voice and really put myself out there and, like, you know, honestly coach my peers, because I know these guys, you know. I think that made it a little more difficult, but honestly, like, made it so much more rewarding when I kind of started to really figure it out. Besides that, I would go out with like lacrosse and soccer, and they were wearing these polar straps. So we did kind of a what's the word called? Like training load and stuff like that. So we kind of created like a load management scale for all of them. So there's like a lot of back stuff on the like Excel, but basically figuring out like where they're most productive. It's like focusing on acceleration and deceleration and like the risk of injury incorporated with that and stuff like that.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And like, I get to be in front with these athletes, you know, which I think is important. You know, coming in, I came in very data heavy, and I only saw the data point as it was, just like a coach might just see a swimmer for its time. But then as you get into it, it's like, I understand this data point to this actual person. Like, I've seen what their practices look like and stuff like that, you know? So it's different than you may expect. And then also I was doing stuff with nutrition. So I ended up doing like a 10-part Instagram series where I would do a bunch of sports supplements. So whether that was like creatine, beta-alanine, caffeine, like multivitamins, all that stuff. And basically the proper ways to take it, how much to take, when to take it, the benefits, and then basically would post it on Drexel Nutrition. And then, you know, just kind of just get a voice out there and educate alongside that. And then strength and conditioning wise, just did a lot of reorganization. But honestly, they cared about my opinion, the whole strength and conditioning office. Having an athlete perspective was something new for them. So they would come to me with a good amount of questions of like, how do we make this the best for the athlete and the athlete user experience, you know? Mm-hmm. And then also kind of just breaking down the silos in which we have and being able to, you know, the sports med are working with strength and conditioning in a prehab, and we're not overlapping on different exercises. So like when I say the coordinator part, that's kind of like what linked everything together. And then obviously the research side of things. So yeah, it was a lot. Yeah. And it's probably more than that, but that was like the most cool parts.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds really, really cool. Like my dad, I told you before we started recording this, but my dad actually went to Drexel as well. And like, that's kind of how like I'm like familiar with like Drexel, and not really familiar, but like I'm like aware of it and like its co-op programs and stuff. So like he told me how beneficial the co-op program was and how like fun it is, but like hearing a first-hand experience, like, I mean, obviously his is first-hand as well, but like first-hand experience, like now it sounds really, really, really cool.
Honestly, one of the coolest things that I think is having created this position, you know, I didn't know if it was going to continue after, but we actually had multiple people apply for the next round for this spring and summer. So there's actually someone that took over my position, and now it's a full-time co-op, you know, so I actually got to like create a full-time co-op position, which is pretty cool to see. And I'm glad to see that, like, my work won't just stop where it is, but it's like it will get continued. And then Drexel Athletics, you know, has people there to support, which is great.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool. And then this is kind of, this is not really about like the whole co-op thing. I do want to continue that, but kind of, yeah, like you said, you warm up the basketball team, right? Is that what you said? This is probably gonna be like very basketball specific, but like kind of like, and tell me if any of these like relate to swimming, but like how did you warm them up?
Yeah, I mean, it would depend. Like for the games, it would generally be like a similar thing. I guess you could call it some type of like walking warm up, but a little more variation. You know, they're very lower body driven sport. You know, so we're just trying to keep them healthy, get them warmed up, get them primed and ready to go. Honestly, it's really nothing too crazy. But sometimes we would take guys one on one, and we would do a little bit more. I guess you could call it like contact prep, you know, get their muscle fiber twitchiness, you know, just like getting them ready to accelerate, stuff like that, getting them to feel big on the court, you know, for those bigger guys, whatever it may be. I probably have some videos on my phone, stuff like that. But just being on court, you know, just screaming, be like, all right, we're going leg swings today. We're going like whatever it is. We're going sideline, you know, like shuffles, whatever it is. And just being able to like kind of, to be in that position was like just really cool in general, you know?
Yeah. That's cool. That's really cool. That's really cool. That's honestly, that sounds really fun having to like warm up the basketball team and like just screaming, cool. Just screaming what to do to like an entire team. Honestly, I feel like that would really boost my ego. I'm not going to lie. That would really boost my ego.
it's what I want to be doing. So it was just cool to be there, you know, because it's like to those guys, it's just like, you know, who's this dude? But they know who I am. And they know I'm serious about it, but it is a really cool experience. Yeah.
Yeah. How, like, what was your favorite part of the whole co-op experience?
My favorite part is, it's pretty simple, but it was just coming into strength and conditioning, and I would just sit down, and the way our room is kind of set up, it's like a box, and then everyone is looking towards the wall to like fit the most amount of people. But a lot of times we would all turn around, just be sitting like four or five of us, and these are all coaches that are near and dear to my heart, and we would talk for like an hour or two, you know. And they were very, I thought, beneficial conversations for myself, but for everyone involved. And it could be the stupidest thing sometimes, you know. But for me, I've gotten very comfortable asking a lot of questions. And that's exactly what I would do, is just ask questions. And then we'd all kind of just learn from each other and like pass stories and experience. So I would say that's probably one of my favorite parts, was just, you know, coming in and just being able to just talk with these guys and just learn. You know, I think it was just as simple as that, you know, and then also just seeing guys that I've worked with, you know, get better. I think that's the other piece of it, you know. It's like, hey, teaching someone new or like something they didn't know, or it's like giving them this tip and then they're like, dude, this actually worked. This made me better, you know, whatever it is. So I think that was probably the greatest parts about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fun. That sounds, honestly, it makes, like, I've gone into like the whole recruiting process. Like the co-op program has been like a very big thing for me. But now it's like hearing your experience, like obviously hearing my dad's experience back when he went to Drexel, it makes me wanna be like, it makes the co-op program so much more important to me. I feel like it's like the whole like in-depth experience and firsthand experience. It sounds like very interesting.
Yeah, I think. And this could be anywhere you go, but there's so many resources. You just have to take advantage of them. And I think sometimes coming in, being new as a freshman, like you're a little nervous. You don't want to put yourself out there all the time. But at least from everything that I've been through, just only people want to help, you know. And just take advantage of them wanting to help you, but take advantage of the resources that you have available to you, you know, as well. I think is very important. But yeah, the co-op program. You know, I don't think there's a lot of places that you can be a high-level D1 athlete and still be able to get this much work experience. You know, if you do a 5x3, which is 5 years, 3 co-ops, you know, you're coming out with a year and a half of potentially working at 3 different, like, big companies or whatever it is you want to do. And having that on a resume is really impressive, I think. But it's not even just the resume piece, but it's just how much you learn. And to be around that environment at a young age, I think is very important. And I think that's part of what makes Drexel so special. And talking to alumni too, they're like, I wouldn't have gotten my job if I hadn't done this co-op. And it might have been a co-op that had nothing to do with what their major was, but they just met the right people. You know, I think that's like another piece of it. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a built-in network for you. You know, it's like if you go to the Ivy League, like they have a really strong network. You know, it's like most of those places have been around for so long. And I think like we're getting to that point where it's like there we have so much resources and networking capabilities. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. So going into the whole like swimming and like the whole like swimming and balancing part of the episode, how have you had any trouble ever balancing schoolwork and swimming?
Yeah, I think freshman year was probably my hardest. I don't want to say trouble. I think it's all doable. It's whether or not you want to do it and how you do it too, I think is important. But like my freshman winter quarter was probably my worst GPA I ever had. I'm not even going to say what it was because it was real bad. But it's just like at that time too, you know, you're taking a lot of gen eds. I was taking, you know, like bio, chem, math, English. And these aren't just like, I had a Wednesday exam like from week 2 to week 8, you know, straight. So it's like every Wednesday, it's like I have an exam. And it's like, I feel like that's kind of wherever you're going to be, that's going to happen. And I think it becomes not more doable, but you learn to raise your standard of what you think is acceptable for how much to study, whatever, you know, it may be. But freshman year was probably the hardest, but now balancing it, this is probably one of my harder quarters that we just started. You know, I'm back in classes after coming off co-op, but I'm just really excited to learn. Just coming off of co-op, I've never thought I'd say those words, but like I'm excited, and everything I'm doing now is really applicable. So I think that's very cool too. You know.
Yeah. How did you get past? Like you said, like you had like a bad quarter, but then like I assume since like the team GPAs has
we're
obviously
definitely
risen above. Yeah. So how did you get past that like bad quarter?
I think it started becoming a lot of the other things, not even like necessarily academics, but like sleep, for example, especially like this year and half of last year. My coach asked a very good question, and it was just like a random day. He's like, what did you do last week at 9 o'clock on a Wednesday? And I was like, he's like, that's a good question. I don't know. And he was like, exactly. He's like, you don't remember, so it's not important. You should go to bed. And I was like, that's actually really true. And I kind of started taking that mentality where I'm in bed by 8, like asleep by 8:30, like every night. And I'll get made fun of a little bit for it because I'm like a little bit of a grandpa. But like, that's kind of the thing is like maximizing the time that you do have. You know, it's like if people say like, oh, I can't do it, I don't have enough time. 99% of the time, that's untrue. Probably almost 100% of the time. It's just, what are you willing to not compromise or sacrifice? But like, I think about it as when I wake up to when I go to bed, like I'm going to try to get as much done as possible. And then I go to sleep earlier because it's like, oh, I'll do my work like after practice at like 7 o'clock. But it's like, well, instead, why don't I do it before practice when I'm doing like recovery boots or something like that? So it's just like sometimes it could be just meshing two things together. So it's like instead of watching YouTube and doing 30 minutes of recovery, you know, let me watch this lecture video or let me do this homework assignment, you know? So I think like it's kind of like just learning where and when to add things in. It's all possible. It's just, you just got to figure it out, you know?
Yeah. What are some of the methods to have better balance? I know you said like, take the like how like the mentality of like if you don't like doing it earlier and like meshing the two things, two or more things together, but like are there anything else, any other methods to better balance it?
I think this just in not even academically, but I think it ties in really well, and I read this book a little bit ago, but it basically was saying that everyone's striving for like balance, especially like that student athlete balance or whatever you want to call it. And this kind of scrapped that and is like, think about it more as counterbalance than balance. So if you think about balancing, you're always trying to even out the scales. So that means you're always trying to pick between two buckets. You know, it's like, I'm trying to do this right and also do this at the same time. But instead, it's more of, let me counterbalance and move and really put myself towards this one thing, you know? So just kind of being more all in and like kind of an attitude. And it's like, it's being able to stick to what is really important, but not letting the other, the piece that may be not as important, like stray away from you. Like it could be personal relationships, it could be recovery, whatever it may be. And that could change week to week. You know, it's like, I know I have exams coming up. I'm going to have to study. Let me go all in on that. I might not be able to see my friends as much, but that's okay. I'll still keep in touch with them, things like that. But it's like knowing when I have to go a little bit more all in, because this is what's going to benefit me in the future right now. You know, I think things like that, and being able to understand that that back and forth, I think is important. And then giving yourself moments, you know, I think the weekends are very important, just in like recovery. And just kind of just letting your main, your mind, like not wander, but just like, you know, take a break. And I think I'm just that kind of person where it's all in or all out kind of a thing. And that's just kind of how I am. But I think it has its advantages for sure. Of just being like, you know, during the week, you know, we go hard. And then it's like, all right, Saturday, I'm going to take a nap after practice. And then it's like, all right, I'm going to go enjoy the city or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and like you said, like all in, all out. So like you're all in during the week, like you're locked in, you're doing all your homework, all your prepping for your exams, going to classes, whatever, right? And then like Saturday, Sunday, you said like you kind of like take a nap, enjoy the city. Like is there, so like are there any like other like stress relievers like that you have to
I think it depends on the time of year, because I like to be outside. So I'll set up my hammock and I'll just listen to music or like get a group of friends together and we'll just hang outside and stuff like that. Like I said, like going around Philly, you know, there's always somewhere you haven't explored. And sometimes it could literally be bedrotting. Like people are like, bedrotting is a bad thing. It's like, dude, I might just watch two movies and sit and lay down for like 4 or 5 hours and just eat some snacks. Like it doesn't have to be anything complicated. You know, it sounds kind of boring. But it's like, since you are so hard in the beginning, like you can kind of like give yourself some grace, you know?
Yeah. What advice would you give to anyone who is struggling to balance swimming in school? Like, I know you said like the whole counterbalancing thing. So is that, is that like one of the advice that you would give? One of the pieces of advice?
Yeah. And I think it also depends on the person too. You have to find the things that work for you. I think one of the biggest things that I can give is preparation is very, I think, important, and just being organized. If you were to take a look at my calendar, like I put everything into my Google Calendar. That just helps me. I have a bunch of post-it notes with things that I have to get done, whatever it may be. I think going into each week, being prepared, you know, allows you to be more successful. You know, when you know the tasks that you have to do, you know, it's like, oh, I have an hour or two here. Let me get this done here. But then it allows you on the back end of your week to have more lump sum of time to just relax, you know? So it's like, instead of doing like one assignment every day, let me just try to get as much done as I can here. And then I'm able to like stack time in more places, you know, if that makes sense. Yeah. I think a calendar, if you don't have one, get it 100%. It's super easy. Put all your classes, you know, your practices in there. I put the stuff where I get there early. I put my prehab in there, you know, and then what's in my calendar becomes a non-negotiable. If it's in there, that means I'm doing it. And I think that helps too. You know, having non-negotiables in your life, I'll show up to every practice 30 minutes before. I'll show up to every lift 20 minutes before. That's a non-negotiable for me. I'm going to go to bed at 8:30. That's a non-negotiable. When you can kind of set those standards, I think that helps too, of like, no matter what, this is just something I have to do. It makes me a better person, more successful. And I think it doesn't have to be many things, but I think that is important, of just setting a time to just focus on what you have to do for yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. Using the calendar. Yeah, make yourself organized and having those non-negotiables. That's good. That's good. I'm definitely gonna have to put that into my daily use. Daily use.
It doesn't have to be anything crazy. You know, nothing crazy. But yeah, I digress.
Yeah, and then last question: if you can go back to your freshman year, what would you do differently? And this is freshman year of high school, not college. But we could do both, freshman and college. Like, what would you?
Oh, sorry, you cut out. I think you cut out a little bit, but I'm guessing you're talking about freshman year and what I would do differently.
Yeah.
Okay. I know this is might sound a little cliche, but it's like, I think what the past experiences have made me the person I am today, you know, so I don't know if I'd necessarily change anything. Maybe it would have been better to figure some things out sooner. But I think your freshman year is always going to be a wake up call. Like, I don't think anyone nails it, but I think that's important to know. I think the two biggest things would be like nutrition and sleep. Everyone's always involved with the next fad, the next supplement. Mm-hmm. Nutrition and sleep are so important, and you don't even realize how much food you have to actually be eating to fuel properly or how much sleep you really need. But just like my coach said, like, what are you doing at 9 o'clock? Probably scrolling. Just go to bed. You know, it's like, if you can learn to have that attitude, I think that helps too. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I think asking questions, you know, I think I was pretty good about that, but whether it's to a coach or to a professor or things of that nature, you know, like, I've gone into a chemistry class. I'm like, hey, prof, like, this is a very hard class for me to just like focus and understand. I was like, is there anything that you can relate to exercise science so that I can be more interested in it? And then she ended up coming with a couple of slides where it was geared towards exercise, and I was more engaged in class. You know, it's like kind of things like that where, you know, it never hurts to ask. Things like that. Mm-hmm. I think your freshman year, and you could see it with our freshmen, and it happens to everyone. It happened to me. But when you get there, you want to earn your place, or you felt like you have to earn your place. You know, you got to come in guns blazing, you know, doing everything right. And I think that's not a bad mentality, but I think it's not perfection. It's progress, progress over perfection. The person who strives for progress and consistency will always be the person who strives for perfection, because the person that's striving for perfection has tried to hit the bullseye, but then they'll end up missing. But the person who's just aiming to make the dartboard will actually do better than they thought they were, you know? So yeah. I think keeping that in mind as you're growing and changing in college, I think is important. Just make progress, you know? It doesn't have to be a mile. It can be, you know, an inch, but just try to be better than the day you were before, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's some good advice. Progress over perfection. I got
a lot of things on my whiteboard, but that's cool. Something since my freshman year, my coach told me, I never forgot. And I guess this one too, own your set, I think is important, especially for swimmers. So even if you're going third in the lane, you should know when you leave, not when how far back you're going from the person. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's like, this person's going on the top. That means like, oh, I'm going 20 seconds back from them. It's like, no, I go on the 20. And this means like, it's a different mentality, but it's owning your set, not following in mindless, like being in control and owning what you're doing. You know, if a coach asks you what's going on, you know what's happening. You're not just following the leader, you know? And I think once you can truly like own it, you'll see improvement just in your practices alone. So own your set, progress over perfection, sleep, nutrition, I think are big ones.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sebastian, for all the stories and all the tips that you have shared. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I probably talked to you off a lot, and I apologize for the long rambling if there was so. But hopefully you got something to take away from it as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man. Thank you so much.
Wow, what an episode. I knew Sebastian would be a great guest on the podcast, but never knew he would be this good. With his uplifting story of how he chose Drexel to the ways he studies best, I learned so much from this episode and really enjoyed talking to Sebastian. I hope you enjoyed my talk with Sebastian just as much as I did. I am Anton Baragovoy. Until next time, in a life in lane.